Good evening. I'm Henry Banks, senior producer and host of People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up in a few minutes, it's another community conversation, and this time we're in Hayward, Wisconsin at the Kinnaman School. It's an historic Native American school that closed down in 1967. My guests will include Aurora Conley, Jordan St. Germain, Sally Finday, and Carissa Corbine. They're here, and they're going to talk about Native American issues, culture, Native American resiliency, and more. That's coming up on People of Color in just a few moments on Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcome to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. My name is Henry Banks. I'm the host this evening. And I would like to, at this time, before we get started, welcome Carissa Corbine. She's the general manager of WOJB Radio in Hayward, Wisconsin. And she's a tribal member of the Lac-Couturier Reservation here in Hayward. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Henry.
Also joining us tonight is Aurora Conley. She's an activist, community organizer, and she's with the Bad River Band. Jordan St. Germain is director of financial aid at the Lac-Couturier Ojibwa Community College. And Sally Finday, she is grant specialist from Leech Lake Ojibwe. Let's give them a round of applause. Would you take a moment, Carissa, to talk a little bit about where we're at this evening?
Well, this school was one of the original schools here in Lac-Couturier. They just renovated it within the past few years. I can't tell you exactly the date, but they've been holding events here and have community meetings and making it available to the tribal members and to the public.
Absolutely. So, you know, as we have started this new partnership with Wisconsin Public Radio and WOJB Radio, tell our listeners a little bit about WOJB Radio and its history and what you do here in this community.
Well, WOJB has been a radio station since 1982. It started. And when the spearfishing came to, there was a lot of protest against that. So WOJB came into the community and was able to share with the listeners, share with the community basically what that was all about. So it became very well known throughout the nation. And now we're still here, we're still ticking. And we are able to provide, you know, music and still educate and entertain our listeners. So that's, the spearfishing was what had brought the station to the national audience.
Mm-hmm. So you got a lot of national attention. You're still here.
Right.
And still producing and providing the necessary music and resources for the Native heritage community. Is that correct?
Correct.
Absolutely. Okay. So thank you all for being here. So I always like to start out by just asking a really tough question. And the first question I have, and I'm going to start with you. We are living in a climate, a racial climate, in this country that has actually turned for the worse in many people's minds. We see there's so much race hatred in this country. It's rearing its ugly head. Why do you think that's going on right now in America?
On the way down, I was actually listening to a few of the issues that the South is dealing with in regards to immigration policies that they're trying to implement and dealing with. I don't think that it's actually rearing its head. I think, like any wound that America has, it's never completely been healed. It's something that's maybe been put a Band-Aid over or covered up in a certain sense, but I was also listening to that America, so to speak, has always been a racial and diverse country ever since its beginning. Immigration from the South, with slave trades happening, race has always been here and it's always been complex, but like I said, I just think it's an issue that's never really been dealt with, and having that at the forefront now and being able to have our own people of color being able to voice our opinions, have awareness and education and how to better handle these issues for ourselves and advocate for that is definitely a process in that healing.
Absolutely. And you want to say your name again, please?
Aurora Conley.
Thank you.
So I think that it seems to be rearing its ugly head is because for so many people, it seems that it's okay now for certain people with certain views to express them as loudly and publicly as they do. I think with the support from the president has really made that okay, even though it affects and hurts millions of people. But I think it's just mostly that it's just coming okay. It's just being portrayed as okay from the very top level of the government.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Sally?
Yeah, I'm Sally Finday. I believe that it's always been here. We've been taught through our public school system that, you know, that, for instance, there are no boarding schools, you know, life is grand, we're a melting pot, blah, blah, blah. There's nothing taught in our schools about treaties or, you know, the actual Holocaust that happened here in the United States for Native Americans. The taking of the land, it's not taught. Nobody understands that. So now that people are afraid because the population growth in this country is more racial and nearly 50%, the Europeans are frightened, and that's why. You know, they're thinking that, you know, we're not going to be in power here, and we've come here. We've conquered. This is our land. That's the way they feel.
So do you believe then, Sally, that that's why so many racially based things are happening in this country, where communities are being plastered with flyers about certain hate groups coming to town, and all of these things are starting to all of a sudden appear in small communities and large communities alike? Do you think that's the reason?
Oh, absolutely. I live in northern Minnesota. I grew up in north central Minnesota. The only people of color that I've ever seen in my community growing up were other Native Americans. And now you can go anywhere and there's people, all a variety of people in my community. The nearest city is Bemidji, Minnesota. It's a city of 10,000 people. And we're becoming so diverse. 3,000 of those people are Native Americans, and they're coming from the communities around it. So I really believe that it's a fear, and it's a fear factor that people have been dealt, and it's like an underground railroad is coming out. These people are, you know, who've been living in fear all this time now feel like, oh dear, now it's, you know, because yes, our political environment right now is creating that fear somewhat, but providing an avenue for it.
So Jordan and Aurora, you're young Native heritage leaders. I want to ask you, what are some of your experiences? What are you seeing in the community as it relates to people getting along? Are we separating ourselves? Are we coming together from your perspective as young leaders? Are you seeing any difference out there?
I'd definitely like to maybe put in that being young and hopeful, I would like to say on the positive spectrum and say yes, of course. As a young person, I think we have come such a long way listening to stories of our history, listening to, you know, the inception of WOJB and how that came about, and really paying homage to those reasonings. Going off what Sally said too, it is about redefining and reclaiming our communities. And I think maybe that's where some of the tension is, because historically some of these communities have been established throughout history as certain groups or certain populations. And now that those are shifting, I think it creates a lot of emotional turmoil too, because you're right, we have been separated from the land. And as Native people reclaiming our lands and reestablishing ourselves and our sovereignty here, obviously you can see prior that even exercising certain rights had caused emotional disturbance for certain populations in this area. So by us pushing those boundaries and also educating, making aware, and by practicing and exercising more, we're going to see probably a lot more tension and being able to, I don't want to say push back against it because that gives sort of a negative tone, but be able to kind of, maybe you're right, embrace and work together with the communities around us, because I think they also want that too. And how can we both manage and create a better community for all of us?
Mm-hmm. Jordan?
Growing up in high school, I went to the public school that's off the reservation. There was a lot of racial tension there. And it wasn't at the height of it because we were more like, there was a big event that happened in, I think, the 70s that actually started our own tribal school on the reservation. And since then, I feel like our generation, we weren't the height of it, but we became the height of it. And it was the natives against the rednecks. And like, there were a few events that happened that I wish wouldn't, but they did. But I think what we kept doing was just, we kept being ourselves and trying to live our lives in by our seven grandfather teachings and just remaining humble and respectful and just being compassionate. We wouldn't feed into it even though we felt those negative effects. And I think that's how being young leaders and just staying true to what those teachings is actually like helping us, like she said, not pushing back, but just bringing more awareness and making a more comfortable environment for both sides.
Mm-hmm. If I could, I like what you say about the public school systems, definitely. I have two sons, a first grader and a third grader, and they are in the public school system in the Ashland School District at this time, because we don't have our own tribal school or the capacity right now. But I was quite surprised because like a month ago, my son came home with Old Yeller, a book I had never read. And as it had turned out to be quite a lesson when we started reading the chapter book, in having to explain to my son certain terms that are in this book about Indians being savages and thieves and, you know, really derogatory terms in it, almost was emotionally overwhelming. And then having to stop and explain to my son that this book is kind of wrong, and then to explain to him also that the writer was writing from a certain perspective. It also drove me to want to know what other books the library had to offer, possibly, that could also embrace our culture and show him the reflective side of some of those stories. So we went out and we found Louise Erdrich's Birchbark book series and called The Library, which they didn't have any of those series, which is also shocking because that set of series of books is based in northern Minnesota and about the very specific people that are from there. So, you know, that caught me by surprise, but, you know, trying to initiate that, like getting reflective books of ourselves in our public school systems.
That's very important to do. Carissa, definitely. Do you have some questions?
Well, I do have a comment. There was a report that was written, just came out, called Reclaiming the Native Truth. And what they talk about in that was they had focus groups all over the nation. And what they had came to find was that, you know, there's a lot of underlying biases for these border towns. So in the border towns that are closest to the reservations, that's where you see a lot of racism. And people have their set opinions and set ways for, you know, however long. But what's important is changing that narrative and educating people with the stories. And like you coming here, it gives us a voice to be able to share that. People often fear what they don't understand. So I want to thank you again for this
Absolutely.
Opportunity to bring us all here together. I just wanted to say thank you to the women here, because that's also what I feel like
their voices are often shut down. The men are primarily leaders, and so when the women are coming up, and the work that all these women have done are to better our communities. And you were talking about the racism that people may experience in these mm-hmm. in these communities. How do you think that we can change that narrative by educating? You said just being able to provide other avenues of books, for example, but how else do you think that we can bring education to the non-native communities?
You're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back. I'm wondering if you all would just take a moment to talk a little bit about Native culture and values and why it's important for all of us to understand Native culture and values and the importance, again, of coming together. Because it seems as though we're not together as a society. I know there are 11 tribal nations within the state of Wisconsin. How do we learn more about Native culture and values so that we are, as a society, respecting our Native brothers and sisters? Sally?
For me, being a Native American, every time I go somewhere, and I've been in the non-Native world a long time, every time I go to someplace, I'm usually the only Native American in the room. I'll go to a county commission meeting and there's no Natives there. You got to walk into the room, and it is uncomfortable. A lot of times it's uncomfortable, and the more you do it, the better you'll become at it. I have gone to other, and I've reached out. Like, I live in an area where there's a lot of Norwegians. I've gone to Norwegian activities. I've tried to embrace what is your culture. It often, I was wondering, why would these people, these farmers, go to the local restaurant and just have coffee in the morning? Well, you know what? That's a cultural factor for them. That's how they communicate. That's how they know what's going on in their community. If you've ever walked into a restaurant in like Fergus Falls area, I've gone into a restaurant there in the morning, a little rural town, and my goodness, everybody was in there and they were all the local farmers, and there were no other women, but I walked in and I'm like, the room was silent. They all turned and looked at me, and they didn't know why. I could see in their eyes, why are you here? And I just said, good morning, how are you doing? And took a seat, and, what else are you going to do? And then I talked to my friends who are non-Native, and they go to a powwow, and they're like, holy moly, do you know what that felt like? And I'm like, yes, I do, because I live that. That is my life. That's the world that I live in, because there are very few Native American people. People often don't even think I'm Native American. They'd rather prefer to think that I'm Hispanic or something. A lot of people don't know Native culture is still here. I think our most important value that we have is the way we used to operate our government was through having a voice, but that voice had to come from everybody. Everybody who was in that community expressed a voice. And once you got everybody's opinions involved, there wasn't anybody that you could say, sit down, you're not old enough. Sit down, you're not, going to do this. Everybody had a voice. And when we voted, it was by consensus. Everybody agreed. Even if they weren't totally on board, they still agreed. And I think that's something that we should always consider when we talk to different governments. We can sit and talk about how our own government structure is at the tribal level. It's not what we used to be, and it's quite frankly unfair. And I think that that's happening all over. All of our people, all of our young people are becoming more and more engaged. We know our history now. I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't know our history. I had no idea, because what I'm taught in public schools isn't anything what should be known by a person like me who's a Native American woman growing up in a rural community. Nothing. we were taught guilt and shame, you know? And now then we went through a period with the movement, the American Indian movement, and that opened everybody's eyes, and then everybody got afraid. Oh, dear Lord, those Indians, now they're doing this in a major way, you know, and it was probably scary for a lot of communities. But that helped us, people my age, to see that, yes, we can do it. And even though that was all going on, I still, as a child, did not see that on television. I did not see it. I didn't even know it was going on in my own town. You know, I didn't know.
So can you talk about, Sally or any of the others here, what a sovereign nation is versus whatever? What's a sovereign nation? What does that mean? Because some people may not know what that means.
Sovereign nation means that we govern ourselves. We are the law. When you come onto our tribal lands, we have laws that you have to follow. And a lot of times that has been taken away from us in the history of our early, well, since the 60s. It's been taken from us. We didn't even know. I had no idea that we have laws. We can make our own laws. Until now, you know what? A lot of us and a lot of the young people today are very well aware of that. We have the capacity to make our own laws, and we will make those laws so that it benefits our people and our generations to come. And that's what sovereignty is. It's just the capacity to make your own decisions for yourself and for your people.
Chrissy, you have a question.
What I feel with, not on sovereignty, but about leadership and talking about our values. As leaders of, you know, tribal communities, I think that they have the power to bring people together, and that's one of the greatest powers that they have. When we talk about the seven grandfather teachings, those are very similar to other people's values as well. I think I have them here listed correctly as wisdom, honesty, respect, truth, love, humility, and bravery. Bravery was the last one I was trying.
Oh, sure.
And you can't have one without the other.
You're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening. Banks, I'm host tonight, and I'm here in a collaboration with WOJB Radio. Carissa Corbine is the general manager at WOJB here in Hayward, Wisconsin. We are honored to be here today in the historic Kinnaman School, a historic one-room school that primarily educated Native heritage children from the first through the eighth grade for many, many years here. Also on the panel, Aurora Conley. She's an activist, community organizer, and she's a member of the Bad River Band. Jordan St. Germain is director of financial aid at the Lakutere Ojibwa Community College. And Sally Findlay is grant specialist at Leech Lake. And we are so honored that you all are here. And for our listeners in the audience, if you have questions, please write your questions down on the 4x6 card and give to Michaela Lampert. She is our production assistant, or to anyone associated with WPR today. We would be happy to hear your questions and hopefully get answers to your questions. Carissa, I want you to take just a little bit more time and tell our listeners about WOJB Radio and what you're doing here to change the lives of so many people in this region.
Well, WOJB is a voice of the people, Native people. We are a tribal radio station. We've been here for a long time. And we carry programming that, you know, is able to educate people with information they would probably not hear anyplace else. Our station is 100,000 watts, so we reach 5 different reservations and plus all the communities in between. We carry programming such as National Native News and Native America Calling, which is a call-in talk show live Monday through Friday that is, we are the only station in Wisconsin that carries that program. On Tuesdays, Native Tuesday, we have contemporary Native music and drum music in the evenings. We are able to broadcast our powwows live so that people can hear a powwow, which might not normally be able to do that. And even for our own members and other people in surrounding communities that don't live here anymore, they can always listen to the powwow. They know when it's there, and they can see, you know, and hear and feel what's going on at home. It's really a special thing that we do, and a lot of people look forward to that every year. And we do the Veterans Powwow, where we honor the veterans, and that's also broadcast live. We have done in the past the New Year's powwow, and also any kind of other important events we can record or we can go live, the tribal elections, so that people can get information. On Tuesdays, we also go to Kubi's Coffee, which we are able to talk to other people in the community, and they can tell us about their programs. So for non-Native listeners, they get some information about what's going on in our community and some things that we do, which is really informational, I think, for everybody.
So working to educate, break down barriers, and provide some incredible programming, obviously, for the Native community and others. And so that's pretty remarkable for what you're doing and for being around for so many years. You've got to be making an impact in this area.
Yep, planting seeds all the time. And I referred to Reclaiming the Native Truth, and that was the report. Now, for a lot of non-Natives, they don't have a lot of information about what Native people, who they are, where they live, or even that they exist at all. So for us to have that opportunity and to share that with all of our listeners is really important, so people can get that education from WOJB and from whoever we have on air.
Absolutely. So, Aurora, I'm going to ask you if you could explain to our listeners what a powwow is and why is it important that people attend powwows. What's the learning associated with that?
Definitely a celebration, an open public celebration. A community will usually host one, and by hosting one, meaning they will do a majority of the organizing, possibly fundraising, a lot of the legwork, because it does take a lot of work to make those things happen, a lot of the invitations and kind of public media type work. But really, I think it's about celebration of the spirit and about our own culture and the beauty of it and the things that we're also grateful for. For example, in Bad River, we hold ours in August and we celebrate the wild rice, which is a very important food staple for Ojibwe people in the northern country. So, and August is our harvest season, so typically we'll have our powwow then. It's a culmination of a variety of dances and colors and art and food. Kind of like what some might associate with a type of festival.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And typically very organized. If anyone...
Anybody else want to comment about that?
Well, what I love best about the powwow is the grand entry. When everybody comes in and you see our people, I remember because I grew up kind of feeling ashamed of being a Native American. I went away, lived in the city, looked at my hand one day and said, oh my God, I'm a Native American woman and I don't know what that means. So then from then on, I started figuring out what that means and where I'm from and blah, 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 and you know, here I am today. So to me, that, when I went there and I saw the powwow and I felt the beat of the drum, because you can feel the beat of the drum when you're sitting there in Grand Entry and all the people in their beautiful, beautiful regalia are coming in and they're all in this circle. It just gives you that feeling of, this is who I am. This is me. This is who we are. And then a lot of those people, like Jingle Dress dancers, everybody is praying. They're all praying. They're dancing for healing for their communities. It's really quite a wonderful community event. And I think that, you know, that's what it was for, was so that we could all get together. And a lot of times marriages happened at these get-togethers. You know, it used to be a pretty big event for smaller tribes, you know, small family tribes, Ojibwe tribes, to get together and marry and have, you know, probably lots of agreements between the other tribes. It was a great, important activity in history, and now today it's a beautiful celebration.
Mm-hmm. All right. I have a question from the audience. I'm going to have you answer this, Sally, and start. Hopefully others will chime in as well. But the question is, one of the values of the Native culture that I find very beautiful is the respect for the elders. How is this instilled in the children?
Well, it starts in the home. And that's one thing that I find was in my own home. You know, they always said, you know, help your grandmother. Or oftentimes, you know, my great-grandpa lived in our home with us for a time. Help your grandpa do this. Don't give him any candy. He's diabetic, you know, stuff like that. We're always told all the time, help your elders, help your mother, help your father. And that's who we are as people. It's respecting our elders and our people. And when you respect your people, you're respecting your family, too. And I think a lot of people there's a lot of people who have a lot of respect, and there's a lot of people who somehow miss the boat. And that's probably because of the boarding schools or whatever. That factor was taken away. And when you take away that factor, then you have a lot of concern for the future because, you know, those families are going without that teaching. They don't know that you have to respect your elders. They don't know why you need to do this. And the whole generational parenting is gone. And I think that's a really good, the respect is one of our foundations, I believe, but it's because of that. It's who we are as a people, and if you don't know that, then you're gonna miss out. And a lot of tragedy happens in our communities if we don't have respect.
Absolutely.
I think it definitely breaks down into the teachings. Teachings as an Ojibwe community, and also those, like she said, it starts in the home. Our communities are very tight-knit, and family is a huge component of that. Like she said, she grew up with her grandmother. A majority of these communities have like a trigenerational family component. A majority of our families will live with grandparents. Those are the dynamics for us since, you know, the beginning, and being able to instill the respect for elders. Small, simple things, like she said, you know, always help out, always be listening, because you also have to think culturally that our history is oral, and it's only recent that our history has begun to be written down. Our languages have been recorded, written down, and so historically our elders were the ones that were like our sources of knowledge, mm-hmm. our libraries for songs and dances and the foundation of our communities. So I think in just that aspect alone, giving that respect to our elders definitely starts with our children and being able to make those connections in our communities.
I think that the elders are a very great source of knowledge, and they hold all infinite knowledge that we don't have. And speaking of language, working to revitalize the language is something that our communities are working very hard on. Jordan might be able to share. Her children go to the Wadukadading, the immersion school here in Lukudere. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Tell him.
What school? So Wadukadading is an Ojibwe language immersion school. When they come in, they leave English at the door, and the entire time they're at school, they're speaking Ojibwe. The teachers and the staff at Wadukadading have created their own curriculum in Ojibwe language because it doesn't necessarily transfer from a public school education in English to an Ojibwe education. So they've had to do a lot of like work around that, and they're doing a great job. Back to the value of taking care of your elders. We take care of them because they took care of us, and everything that like holds true to our values is what we learn from them. That's how we learn how to provide for ourselves and learn how to take care of our children. And we're always thinking ahead. They teach us who we are. They teach us how to live. And so we definitely need to take care of them and help out.
You're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back. I believe for you, Jordan, to help educate the greater community about the Ojibwe culture, I'd like to see an outreach to senior citizens that the LCO classes are free to them.
We actually do. We have an elder discount, so I believe the age is 60 or 65. You can actually enroll at classes at the college. You get your tuition waived, and you also rent your textbooks. So we loan the textbooks. So there's no cost for elder students to attend our college.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
So are there any other perks that you offer? They go beyond tuition and books?
You get to see me there. No, the college, we really do have so many amazing things going on there. We have like summer programs for the kids that help get them back in touch with their traditional customs and teachings. We've recently started an Indigenous Culinary Arts program, which is teaching students to cook with solely Indigenous foods that we've been harvesting and gathering for hundreds of thousands of years.
Sure. So go ahead. You were going to say something.
I would just like to say, just because I love LCO College, I just think that they're amazing what they do as one of their alumni, but I think it definitely helps connect people to maybe a certain calling, and because like what I was saying before in terms of being connected, that one of our values too is that we all have a purpose and a place. We all have a reason and a for sure fire, you know, existence and being as a human. And through the college, maybe, you know, they might have a calling for whatever it might be, a teacher, a doctor, because everyone has a specific purpose and a place, whether in their community here in LCO or either in the LCO college, or they take that, go back to their own communities. Whatever it may be, that's definitely one of the perks of the colleges, is being able to educate our own people and have our own values aligned and have those in one setting where it's more comfortable for us to learn. It's more aesthetic for us, and you know, we're able to take that and influence the rest of the communities that we go back to.
Sure. You're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. You know what? I'm going to say this. You have an incredible amount of beautiful facilities here in this community. Can you talk about some of those facilities, your government center, your healthcare facilities? And, you know, you're doing some really good work over here, and people need to understand the impact of the work in a variety of different ways that it's happening. Sally, would you like to comment on that, or somebody else here?
Well, actually, I'm from Minnesota, but I have driven around this neighborhood today, and I found that it's really incredible. I went to the government center, and it's pretty awesome. You have got new housing, which I was really impressed with. We drove through some of the neighborhoods. So from an outside person, it was like, wow, you know, because that's what I'm like. I'm a Native American. I want to see what other people over here are doing. How do their homes look? What are their features? They have a great school, it looks like, a Boys and Girls Club. I saw lots. Housing
Doing great
authority.
Work. Doing
yeah.
great work.
Powwow grounds.
I think to speak on a perspective of tribal development from, you know, I grew up in Bad River, and I remember the first two roads were dirt. You know, and it was just like these two dirt roads with like 20 houses out in the middle of these woods, and there was like no street lights, and you know, like we didn't have a store or school, or, you know, there was nothing like that. There was just massive, beautiful woods to what it is now and where that kind of have come from or developed from. And maybe someone can speak on that too and how that maybe came to be. Because, you know, LCO is really amazing in their development. Red Cliff has beautiful new housing. Even seeing like Red Lake and the beautiful development in Minnesota that they have this amazing building with like an eagle on top of it, like built into their construction of the building. Oneida has an amazing school that's in the shape of a turtle down there for their elementary school. These are the kind of developments that are more reflective of who we are, you know, and it's really amazing to see those come up in the communities and take pride in those. And looking at the history from, like I said, where, when I was growing up, there was nothing like that when I was a kid to where we are now. With in Bad River having like a grocery store, simple things like that, a gas station, you know, street lights, small things that really help our community and where we'd like to see it go and how institutions such as LCO Community College has helped that and WOJB.
Mm-hmm. Carissa, it looks like you want to say something about that.
Well, I think Indian Gaming has been able to provide some of these different entities with things you've never been able to have before. And if you live in a rural community, you need to understand that sometimes just getting to the grocery store and getting a gallon of milk, if you run out, if you don't have that nearby, that's, you know, could be a 20, 30 minute drive. So here there is a grocery store, two gas stations, a Boys and Girls Club that's available for anybody in the community. And I think they take a whole busload of kids from Hayward now and bring them to the Boys and Girls Club. It's won national awards. It's a beautiful building. They just expanded. I think they finished it last year or the year before. And to be able to have these opportunities that most have grown up not having is pretty special, I think. And it's not only for only tribal members, it's for anybody in the community. And LCO does have the college, the K through 12 school, and there's a lot of reservations that don't have those kinds of entities. And they also take students from other places as well. There's Bad River kids who were bussed over and went to tribal school as well. And that provides them an opportunity to be accepted in their own environment. Because like she said, sometimes when you go to school, I'm going to school right now and I'm the only brown person I ever, or like me, that looks like me in school. So it also provides students with the opportunity to stay close to home, because sometimes when they leave, that gap is too much, and they, you know, they don't have that family component next to them or their community, and it's really beneficial. I don't know, how many kids do you graduate every year from LCO?
This year we have 42 graduates from the college.
That's really
good.
And I know that it spans generations. My aunt is graduating this year, and she's, you know, in her 60s, and she's going to be graduating. We're really excited for her.
That's great. Aurora?
Definitely, I just wanted to, because I'm also a huge advocate for education. On the way down, I was listening, and in the University of Wisconsin system, there are only 628 self-identified Native Americans. Only 628 across the entire University of Wisconsin system. That means we only make up 0.1% of the population in the University of Wisconsin system. And that just kind of like blew my mind that we don't even make up 1% of the population here. And I just think that with the development and these institutions and the things that LCO College is doing, because I also know that they help link up in larger university four-year institutions, you know, and that's been an effort that they've been trying to push forward for like the last decade. But seeing those kinds of gaps made, helping our own people get educated, is only going to further our communities and further our families and help us be able to lead and run our own sovereign nations. Because really, it's our own tribal members that can only be elected to our tribal councils and govern our communities. So I don't see why we're not putting in more effort for leadership development and skills into our own youth and to our own children, and providing them the opportunities and the education that they are important. We need them. We're really going to need them in 30 or 40 years, maybe even less.
Right. So are you aware of the University of Wisconsin system? They just released a press document about, let me just tell you what it says. It says the University of Wisconsin system released a document that indicates that the system will or has committed to creating and implementing a tribal consultation policy that will help guide the UW's work with tribal communities. This is only the second such policy for a statewide system in the United States. So there's a need, but this is only the second statewide system to do this.
Definitely, and I think that as we take great pride in our accomplishments and we practice bravery in pushing those, we also have to practice some sort of humility in recognizing that there's still a huge need for that. Even this past year, I'd like to acknowledge that we just nominated and elected the first Native American women to Congress. I mean, that's a huge feat, and as proud as we are and as remarkable as that is, mm-hmm. we also are very excited to see, I'm excited to see more work being put behind that and where we can go from different communities as there. Because you're right, being the only second, that's amazing and that's a great feat, but we also have 48 more states to go.
That's right. That's right. So we're just about out of time. I want to take this time to thank all of you, Aurora Conley, Jordan St. Germain, Sally Finday, Carissa Corbine from WOJB Radio. You all are just remarkable. But before we close, I have this question, and I'm going to start with you, Aurora, and then go that way and then back to Carissa. You kind of alluded to this tonight. It's about the resiliency of the Native American community. Give us some final thoughts about the resiliency of the Native American community.
It's definitely in every one of us. Like I said, I think it goes back to that about having your purpose and your place and your connectedness to yourself and your values and your own identity. And many of us identify as being Native or Indigenous in many different ways. And it's definitely about embracing who you are and practicing that and staying true to yourself and your own culture with ceremony and education and definitely just by your existence alone is a resiliency. And staying true to yourself and your own existence, I think, is the best form of resiliency I think you could give yourself, your family, and your community.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The resiliency of the Native community, like she said, there's a purpose and a place and connectedness to the land and everything around us. But right now, like, as much as everybody who voted a certain way are able to portray their beliefs and their views, it's okay for us to be Native now. We're getting our representation in the government. We're getting better representation on TV and in the media. And right now, I'm 29 years old, so I'm younger, and I've never had to hush to be Native. My mom may have, my grandparents may have. They've all had to hide their traditions. They've had to learn how to speak English and cut their hair and all of that. But right now, for me and my kids, we're going to be as strong and as loud as we can of our traditions and our culture, because it's okay for us to, and it's our time to keep that going and reclaim our own self-identity of being Native people.
Sally?
I have to agree that, you know, being resilient means you have to know who you are. You have to have a strong value of who you are and what your community looks like. And also to know, you know, to find out. And I'm so happy with us, because when I was growing up, I didn't have that. Nobody taught me how good it is to be Native. Nobody taught me about sovereignty. Nobody taught me about a whole lot of anything Native. You know, so for me, it was just, I grew up in a non-Native world, and I learned to figure it out, and then I learned how to figure out how to be Native, what that means. So I think, you know, resiliency for me comes from my family. You know, my base, my father always saying, you've got two ears, two eyes, two legs like everybody else. You can do whatever you want to do. That was his bottom line. That he said, you got it. If you're missing some of those, I can see that would be a hindrance, but you've got everything. Mm. You can do it. And I think that's important. And I know that, you know, my mother was the leader in our family. And that's a tradition. That's an Ojibwe tradition. Women are leaders in their families. And they were always leaders at the Ojibwe table before the 1800s. And they were always in leadership roles. They were always well respected. We're coming back to that. And I think it's a really good thing for us. And it's all about education, because that's what it is. If you don't know who you are, and at least you can ask today. Before, it was like you couldn't even ask. Native people weren't even allowed to practice their religion until 1978. I mean, that's pretty bad, I think, you know, when you can't even go to your church, mm-hmm. our church, our way of life. Mm-hmm. It was always trying to take away from us.
Thank you. Carissa.
I think we get our resilience from our elders, and it's historically, it's ingrained in our DNA. You may forget your purpose in life sometimes, but your purpose never forgets you. And we're still here. And we're still serving our community. And that's what I feel like we do best as Native people together.
Well, thank you all again for being here and taking the time out of your very busy schedule. I have to thank some other folks who are making this possible. Engineers John Talcott and Mark Lundin, Michaela Lampert and Benjamin Turner, thank you all for helping out with the show today. And this has been an incredible conversation. And I don't want to forget our audience. Thank you for being here tonight. This has been a truly remarkable opportunity. I'm so honored to meet every single one of you. Let's give ourselves a round of applause. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Have a good evening.